Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 448 for October 19th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
Rather than looking outwards, why don't the countryside where all these distilleries are built, why don't we look at Glasgow?
We are basing ourselves in Carlow, which is obviously our home county, but also this is the central region for growing barley, malt barley in the whole country.
We got word of two new distillery projects this week. Tim Morrison of the family that founded Morrison Beaumont is leading his family's new project on the Queen's Dock in the heart of Glasgow. And Bernard Walsh of the Irishman and Writer's Tears fame is close to realizing his dream of building a distillery in Ireland's County Carlow. We'll hear about both projects later on WhiskeyCast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and a change of pace in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this week's WhiskeyCast.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's get started with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. If someone tries to sell you a case of Pappy Van Winkle's Family Reserve bourbon off the back of a truck, Sheriff Pat Melton in Franklin County, Kentucky would like to know about it. Of course, the whiskey world was stunned this week to hear that a couple of hundred bottles of Pappy 20-year-old bourbon and 27 bottles of Pappy 13-year-old rye were stolen out of a warehouse at Buffalo Trace. Sheriff Melton has told media outlets in Kentucky that he suspects an inside job, since the thefts apparently took place a case or two at a time over the last couple of months. As we heard back at the end of August from Preston Van Winkle, this year's Pappy releases were being prepared for shipping during October. The whiskey was being stored on pallets in a secured warehouse on the Buffalo Trace grounds, and the theft was discovered early this week. Only about 50 Buffalo Trace employees have access to that warehouse, and Sheriff Melton's investigators are questioning everyone. Both Buffalo Trace executives and the Van Winkle family turned down my requests for interviews because of the ongoing criminal investigation. I'll have more updates on this story on WhiskeyCast.com as details become available. By the way, if you have any information that might help deputies crack the case, our latest story on the WhiskeyCast website has the contact information for the Franklin County Sheriff's Department. In other news, last Sunday's auction of the one bourbon even more rare than Pappy Van Winkle raised more than $10,000 for the ALS Association's Parker Beams Promise of Hope Fund. The two-bottle set of Master Distillers Unity went for $10,115 during the Bonhams Fall Whiskey Auction in New York City. The winning bidder has chosen to remain anonymous. The whiskey was blended by Parker Beam at Heaven Hill from bourbons donated by Wild Turkey, Woodford Reserve, Four Roses, Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, and Buffalo Trace, along with some of Parker's own bourbon from Heaven Hill. 12 bottles were filled in all, but the other 10 were used for a special toast to Parker last Saturday at Whiskey Fest New York. The auction also included a bottle of Old Vatted Glenlivet dating back to 1862 that sold for $7,735, and a bottle of Aberlour Glenlivet given as a gift by President John F. Kennedy that went for $6,545. In other auction news, the Worshipful Company of Distillers held its annual charity auction Thursday night in London. The group is one of the original livery companies of the City of London. It was founded in 1638. Its main purpose now is to raise funds for charity, and the auction raised more than £250,000, or about $400,000. Former Morrison Beaumont chairman Brian Morrison was the master for this year's auction, and a one-of-a-kind 48-year-old 1964 Beaumont bottled just for the auction brought the highest bid of the year for any whiskey auction worldwide, £61,000, about $98,600. Another one-off from 1964, this one from the Dalmore, sold for £28,000 and is said to be the highest price ever paid at a live auction for a Dalmore bottling. A four-bottle set of Hazelwood single malts celebrating the late Janet Sheed Roberts's 90th, 100th, 105th, and 110th birthdays sold for £31,000. and motor racing fans will appreciate this. The opening item came from the legendary Formula One driver Sir Jackie Stewart's personal collection, a rare bottle of the 1993 Jim Clark Festival Pure Malt that went for £1,500. In other news, the Balvenie has released the latest batch of maltmaster David Stewart's Ton 1401 single malt. Batch number 9 will be available exclusively in the U.S. It's a vatting of 11 ex-bourbon casks and 3 ex-sherry butts that were blended in David's special ton at the distillery. The suggested retail price is $250 a bottle. If the releases hold true to form, batch number 10 should be out in travel retail in early 2014, followed by a UK release of batch number 11 next summer. The U.S. is also getting sister distillery Glenfiddich's latest expression exclusively. The 19-year-old Age of Discovery Bourbon Cask Reserve is said to celebrate the American bourbon industry for supplying its barrels to mature Scotch whiskies in over the years. Meanwhile, Glenmorangie has unearthed a rare single malt. Just 50 bottles of the 1963 vintage were found and are now available in new packaging using the original Glenmorangie label styles from the period. The suggested price, $2,600 each. Anoch is finishing off the Peter Arkell series of limited edition bottlings. The fourth and final release features his illustration of the warehouses at Knockdoo Distillery, where Anoch is produced. 12,000 bottles are available worldwide. Johnny Walker is completing the Explorers Club collection with The Royal Route. It'll be available in travel retail markets worldwide, and Johnny Walker will also be releasing Gold Label Reserve in the U.S. for a limited time. That's the new no-age statement blend similar to the classic 18-year-old Gold Label. The new version is available widely around the world, but hasn't been sold in the U.S. until now, while stocks of the original Gold Label are being depleted. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at WhiskeyCast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, continuing the Cask Masters project. You've helped us choose the whiskey, and you've helped us choose the name. Next, help us choose the packaging. Sign up online at glenmorangie.com.
This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. Let's catch up on a couple of recent requests for help from WhiskeyCast community members. A couple of weeks ago, we heard from Justin Victor. His relatives were visiting Australia, and he wanted recommendations on an Australian single malt whiskey to have them bring home for him. We had a couple of suggestions from Scott Mansfield and Matt Wooler. Scott recommended Hellier's Road's Pinot Noir cask finish, and that's just what Justin's relatives wound up picking up for him. Scott and Matt both, thanks for the suggestions, guys. And Justin, please let us know how you like that Hellier's Road when you get to taste it. Daniel Weber from Indiana posted this note the other day. My wife is going to be flying through Newark later today, Shannon, Ireland, and Heathrow in the next week. Any recommendations to ask her to look for? I'm usually a bourbon drinker, so I'm most optimistic about selections in Newark, but I like Irish and Scotch too. I already have several of the non-U.S. options from Ireland, like Green Spot, Yellow Spot, Jameson Signature Reserve, and Connemara Turf Moor. Well, I told Daniel not to expect much in Newark, but that she'd find much better options at Shannon and Heathrow, and Daniel responded the next day. She went to the Newark duty-free, and the options were not very good. I was surprised they only had 2 bourbon options, Wild Turkey and Maker's. I thought there may have been more. It seemed based on her description that there were some interesting Scotch choices, but nothing that blew me away as she was listing them. I hold out much better hope for her return flights. Daniel, so do I. Let us know what she brings back for you. Ken Goldenberg from Orange County, California, posted a long note the other day, and I've edited it down just a bit. Hey, Mark, I just want to say how much I love the look of the website, and I'm really looking forward to your upcoming WhiskeyCast University offerings. One idea I have for either the university or a podcast would be on the science and subtleties of taste and aroma. Why is it that you yourself can taste 40 Creek whiskey, as a recent example, and get far more flavor and aroma notes out of it than I can? All I could smell was caramel corn, and I certainly could not get out of it the flavors you did. I'm a big fan of the America's Test Kitchen podcast, and sometime back they did a segment with a sensory expert on this subject, and I found it fascinating. Christopher Kimball, the owner of Cook's Illustrated and America's Test Kitchen, is one with a very sensitive palate and therefore is put off by too spicy foods and sauces. I, on the other hand, can douse potato chips with hot sauce and be happy. The conclusion was that someone like me has less flavor receptors, so therefore my taste is more muted when it comes to certain flavors. Funny, I'm a certified barbecue judge of the Kansas City Barbecue Society and have no trouble picking out off flavors or spices that are too dominant in the barbecue, but whiskey, not so much. That really got me to thinking of how you come up with all those aroma and flavor notes, such as dirt or leather or creosote, that one would never normally associate with a whiskey. So, after this long message, I hope you'll consider my suggestions. Thanks again for your shows and fantastic information. Well, Ken, as always, thank you for the kind words and the suggestion. That is a really good idea, and I'm going to see what I can do to make that happen here in the near future. If you have a suggestion for something you'd like to hear on WhiskeyCast, a question or anything else you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can do just like Ken did and post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com, or just email me. My address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker on the web at johnnywalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Lots of things going on over the next few weeks. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter has a New York City preview tasting coming up on Thursday night at St. Andrew's Restaurant in Manhattan. That same night is the Philadelphia Whiskey and Fine Spirits Festival, followed the next night by the Pittsburgh Whiskey and Fine Spirits Festival. The Irish Whiskey Society has a tasting on Friday night in Carlingford, Ireland. The Filson Bourbon Academy's next class is on Saturday in Bloomington, Indiana. Reserve 101 has a George Dickel charity tasting in Houston, Texas on October 29th. Drinkmonger in Edinburgh, Scotland has a Halloween tasting of single grain whiskeys on the 31st. Whiskey Live Toronto is November 1st, along with the Whiskies of the World Expo in Atlanta and the First Friday single malt tasting at the Miner's Delight Inn in Atlantic City, Wyoming. Those are just some of the nearly 300 different events on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at Laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Kevin O'Gorman, master of maturation, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
We're very fortunate in Midleton to have two very, very good coopers. Ger Buckley was our head cooper, and Donny O'Regan, the other cooper. In fact, Donny's nickname is Duxer, but we won't go into that. So we have two very, very good coopers, and their whole emphasis is on the quality of the cask and the quality of the wood. And they spend basically 8 hours a day, or even longer, looking after our cask. Ger, for example, is a fifth generation cooper. So it's in his family, five generations. In the cooperage area, he does a lot of cask repair. Most of the cask repair now would be the sherry butts. Because they're quite expensive, we would spend a lot of time, if needs be, repairing sherry butts. So Ger has a great appreciation of wood. His whole life revolves around wood, be it at home or at work. He also does a lot of work here for us as well in terms of, you know, doing special casts or making up different types of wood products. And Duxer spends a lot of time on cask inspection, the American barrels coming in from the States, and also the sherry butts. And again, the two of them together, their clear objective is quality of the wood, and that's really it.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
You know who probably has the most job security in the whiskey business these days? It's the guys who make the stills at Forsyth's in Rothes, Scotland. Just about every new distillery in Europe and more than a few of the ones being built around the world are sourcing their stills from the coppersmiths at Forsyth's. And that includes the two new distillery projects announced this week, the Walsh Whiskey Distillery in County Carlow, Ireland, and the Morrison family's Glasgow Whiskey Distillery on the banks of the River Clyde in Glasgow. We'll look at both projects on this week's WhiskeyCast in depth, starting with what would be Glasgow's first new distillery in more than 100 years. Tim Morrison's grandfather founded Morrison Beaumont in 1963, and his family now runs the A. Dewar Rattray independent bottling firm. Morrison and a small team of Morrison Beaumont alumni have been itching to get back into the distilling business. They've applied for planning permission to build a distillery on the Queen's Dock along the River Clyde.
I'm afraid we've just got to hang around and wait. There's very little one can do because The worst is that we don't get planning, but I don't think that will happen. I mean, all indications are that we will get planning approval, and then we can move ahead. The first stage will be actually the construction of the visitor centre with the present building that we have bought to be part of the Heritage Centre / Visitor Centre as well. And then, as I said, thereafter, the construction of the distillery.
Now tell me why you decided to pick Queen's Dock. It's right in the heart of Glasgow, right along the river. Why pick that site?
Well, when we lost a site on the east coast of Scotland, we decided, we thought as to whether we were going to continue with the with consideration of building a production plant or whether we would forget it. And one of the chaps, Glenn Moore, who's an ex-Beaumont marketing guy and worked with me a number of years ago, or I was on the board when he was there, said rather than looking outwards, why don't you know, to the countryside where all these distilleries are built, why don't we look at Glasgow? And I said I thought that would be a very good idea, because Glasgow has got a tremendous history of production, distilling, warehousing, bottling, and many of the great companies in the Scotch whisky industry were based in Glasgow. In fact, there used to be about six or seven distilleries in Glasgow at the sort of turn of the century. Two grain distilleries in Port Dundas and Strathclyde. And you know, the heritage of these companies, and the Queen's Dock used to be the dock where all the boats with excisable goods were on them, and when they had to be unloaded, they had to be unloaded in this excisable area, which was shut off. And the pump house was built to pump the gates up or down according to whether a boat was going in or out. And so that's the history there. And of course, the River Clyde itself has a tremendous heritage and history of industry and goods going out to far-flung parts of the world. So we were lucky to find it, and but once we thought about it, and as I say, it was Glenn Moore's idea that we would proceed, and found this tremendous building, which we've bought from Clydeport, who have been very helpful to us and assisted us in every way possible, you know, they're good people to be working with, very good people to be working with.
Now, you've brought a bunch of other ex-Morrison Beaumont alumni, for lack of a better term, in on this, haven't you?
Well, the gentleman I was talking about was Glenn Moore. He started at Auchentoshan Distillery, and then on the production side, and then they moved him on to the marketing side, and he spent quite a bit of time at Beaumont on the actual distillery before coming back into Glasgow. And he left a few years ago to set up his own marketing consultancy and did a bit of work for us on our whisky experience in Kirkoswald. And then Harry Coburn was the production director at Beaumont, and he will be responsible for erecting the distillery and designing it and making sure that all the various parts that have to be put in certain places are put in certain places.
Now, this is an unusual project because it's the first distillery, as far as anybody knows, that's been built in Glasgow from the ground up in about 100 years.
Correct.
Are there any special concerns with building it right in the middle of that urban environment right along the port and along the river?
Well, we are not too worried because there's no domestic buildings near us. It's the SECC, which is the Scottish Conference Centre, and then there's further along the river there's the Transport Museum, and what they are trying to do is build up that whole part of the River Clyde. And they see what we are doing as a tourist attraction and an effort to, tidy it up and help the conference and the convention bureaus to attract more people to Glasgow.
Now, you mentioned your whiskey experience shop. We really haven't focused on that a whole lot, but... Tell me about that. I know it's out in the countryside, but could you also create a branch of that here at the new distillery?
The whole point of the visitor center that we are developing, in fact, you hear of people today building distilleries with visitor centers. Actually, we are doing it the other way around. We are developing a visitor center with a small batch distillery. And so the visitor center is going to be it will be bigger than the distillery. And that has two benefits. One is it's going to obviously attract tourists. But more importantly, in the first two or three years, we will be able to generate cash, which we would not have been able to do for about 3, 4, 5 years. And as far as the visitor center is concerned, we are intending portraying the industry. We'll be capturing the heritage of the industry, capturing the heritage of all the companies that, or many of the companies that worked in Glasgow during this last century. In fact, in 1963, there's a trade directory called Harper's, and in Glasgow there are actually 83 companies listed who actually were involved in some way in the whiskey industry.
Tell me how this is going to fit into the Duer Rattray side of the family business now. Will you be bottling these whiskeys under the Duer Rattray label?
No, we
have their own separate label. How's this going to work?
They're actually going to be really quite separate. And while the ownership of Duer Rattray is with the family here, so will the distillery primarily be the family. But we see it as being a separate project. Duer Rattray has established its position around the various markets that it works in. We will have to start developing various markets for the distillery, the Glasgow distillery, but it is our intention to develop the brand name and brand names for the distillery.
But for now, it's just the Glasgow Whiskey Distillery,
it's
right?
It's going to be called the Glasgow Distillery at the Pump House.
But no word yet on what you're going to call the brands, right?
No. I think, obviously, one day when we have spirit, we will call it the Glasgow Malt, probably.
You excited about this?
I'll be more excited when we get planning permission.
The Glasgow project is expected to cost around $16 million. Meanwhile, Ireland's County Carlow is beginning to become a whiskey hotbed once again. Earlier this year, the Carlow Brewing Company started a small distilling operation with support from Altec's Pierce Lyons as a first step to a standalone distillery. This week, Bernard Walsh unveiled the plans for a $34 million distillery in Royal Oak. His family-owned company has sold the Irishman and Writer's Tears Irish whiskey brands for years, using whiskeys sourced from Middleton and Bushmills. but he's wanted to make his own whiskey for many years. In fact, the first time we met in 2008, that was one of the things he told me.
This was, you know, our dream. We mentioned to you at the time this is what we want to do, but we knew it was long term. And, you know, you don't get into this business without thinking it through first, because it was, you know, it's not so difficult to start distilling with a small pot and pan and what have you, and away you go. But we wanted to do something, you know, that was commercially viable, and making sure, I knew that, you know, it's one thing starting and but making sure you have enough funds in place to lay down some serious stock over many years, not just a 3-year minimum requirement. And that was the first big thing. Also, I was very conscious, you know, it's not just about the money again, it's about the partnership, that we wanted to find somebody or a firm that also believed in the same things that we did, and that had, if you like, I suppose, a global presence, not a multinational. And we had to wait our time, you know, pace ourselves and wait. And we actually found what we believed to be the right partner.
And that's the folks from Italy at Ilva Serrano Holdings.
That's right, Ilva, yeah.
What do they bring to the table? Because they're known for Di Serrano liqueur, but they don't have anything in the whiskey business, right?
Absolutely, and that's, I suppose they're a sleeping giant in Italy. They're a very, very successful firm. The best-selling liqueur in Italy, the fifth best-selling liqueur in the United States, your very own nation. They also own many other brands, some you'll know, Tia Maria. They own their own vodkas, Arctic, Sambucas, but they have a gaping hole in whiskey, and they saw Irish as a strategic play versus Scotch. They saw it as, you know, less competition, easy to enter. Also, I suppose they're looking long term. They understand the whiskey game, even though they're not in it. They understand the business, that this is long term, and they're investing for the future. They own their own distillery in India, by the way. They own their own production facility, distribution. They have a huge stake in the largest wine distribution firm in China. So their Asian presence is massive. Irish whiskey really hasn't arrived in Asia yet. Yes, all brands are trading there, but there's not enough stocks, as you know, of Irish to penetrate that market. 90 whatever. Most of Irish whiskey is concentrated on North America, Europe, Russia. That's where the stocks are concentrated. So this is a really nice realignment.
Let's go through the mechanics now. You're applying for planning permission, I assume, or do you already have that in place? When does construction start, and when do you start distilling?
Okay, good questions. First of all, last week when we announced, the announcement was this week. Last week we did all the actual official signings. So the land was purchased at the same time. We can talk about the land in a minute. The order was placed with four sites in Scotland for our pots. All of that happened last week. The planning permission, the plans will be submitted January. The first sod will be turned in April. And we will be distilling in 2016.
And this means a lot to the town of, I believe it's Bagnallstown, right?
Yeah, it's Royal Oak, which is the village, and it's sandwiched in between two towns, Bagnallstown and Loughlinbridge, along the River Barrow in Carlow. And it means a lot because this region, the southeast of Ireland, in years gone by would have, you know, had quite a few distilleries, obviously long gone now, but this, in the last year, this region has lost two very big breweries, one Smithwick's in Kilkenny, and it's and also down in Waterford, the Azure brewery there, gone. So although, you know, we're not, I suppose this is a small contribution in jobs, it does help. And as you probably know, Mark, the distilling business, although maybe low in direct jobs, it's hugely important for the local economy, We are basing ourselves in Carlow, which is obviously our home county, but also this is the central region for growing barley, malt barley in the whole country. So supporting the local farming community, we're well placed.
And this is obviously, as you said, your home county, so you've got ties to the neighborhood, right?
Yeah. This, you know, we live here. Our kids go to school here. Our families are farmers in the area, barley growers. So, you know, you can't get any close. This is, I suppose, from my house, 15-minute drive. Yeah, this is home.
Walsh plans to start distilling in 2016, but will use the whiskey from his distillery to create new brands. He plans to keep making the Irishman and Writer's Tears with those whiskeys from Middleton and Bushmills. That's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth. Next time around, we'll talk with Morrison Beaumont's Ian McCallum. Now, you may have noticed that my voice is a little stuffy this week. I've had a nasty cold and sinus bug the entire week that kept me from nosing or tasting any whiskeys, but the folks at Speyburn saved me late this week. They sent out a recipe for a Speyburn hot toddy and a sample of Speyburn 10-year-old to go along with it. So there is something to talk about in the What I'm Tasting This Week department. If you haven't tried a hot toddy before, and I'll admit that I was in that group until this week, it's a nice sinus clearer and improved my general mood about 200%. The recipe, a dram of whiskey, in this case the Speyburn 10-year-old, boiling water, a teaspoon of honey, a cinnamon stick, and a couple of cloves, along with a slice of lemon. Pour the honey into your mug, put a little boiling water in to dissolve the honey, then add the whiskey. Top off the mug with water, add the cinnamon and the cloves, then let it sit for 5 minutes. Take out the cloves, leave the cinnamon stick in if you like. I did. Add the lemon slice, and when it's cooled off a bit, sip away. You'll find the recipe for the Speyburn Hot Toddy on the Cocktail Collection page at WhiskeyCast.com, along with notes for more than 1,000 other whiskeys. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news, and the calendar of events, along with a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.